Welcome in, ladies and gentlemen, to the DC Sports Brain Trust. I am your host and moderator, Varun, joined, as always, by three of my good friends and analysts, Chris, Nick, and Rahul. How you gentlemen doing today?
Beautiful.
It's nice weather outside.
It is very nice outside.
Nice weather. It's been raining today.
Why don't we go ahead and just jump right in? Here at the DC Sports Brain Trust, we talk DC Sports, and we want to open today with baseball. As we know, the MLB season is rumored to start in late June, and then we want to talk Nats. Let's talk about the third baseman. We did talk about last week with Carter Kieboom that potentially he may not work out just due to his struggles in spring training. So in which case, the Nats may want to look into potentially trading and trying to find a third baseman for another team. So if the Nats were to make a trade, who do you all think that we could go for? Chris, why don't you go ahead and start?
I mean, there's a couple of options, but the problem with the Nats this year is that they don't have a lot of pieces to trade away because their farm system is fairly weak. They did apparently talk to the Cubs and the Rockies this past offseason about Chris Bryant, who was kind of displeased with the front office during the offseason, but that might have moved on. And then also Nolan Arenado seem to be the two top picks that they want. But like I said, there's not really a lot of prospects the Nationals could part ways that teams would jump on board with.
Yeah, definitely. Plus Arenado is arguably the best third baseman in baseball, and it would take it would be a lot to give up in order to get him.
Yeah, I mean, they'd probably have to bounce their like Luis Garcia and Mason Denenberg, I think, were there. Maybe Jackson Rutledge as well, who are three of my favorites in the pipeline, but I don't see the Nats.
Nick, what about you? What are your thoughts on this?
I think it's hard to say. I think, you know, you're going big if you go for Nolan, but, you know, the guy's Anthony Rendon levels of great, and depending on where the season is, where the team is by the time the trade deadline comes around, I think you've got a couple options. You could go big. Yeah, trading Nolan would probably require, like a big farm piece. It would require something like Carter Kieboom playing well in the farm system again, and or showing some sort of promise, and we'd have to trade him and probably some picks for Nolan. I think you could look at a couple older guys as rentals too, you know, if you're going to make another push, like Todd Frazier or Justin Turner. I think Frazier's like 34 and Turner's like 36. They're both pretty grizzled vets, you know, good options to plug and play. If third base is really an issue this year, I think you've got a few options. I do like the way the Nets approach, you know, trade deadline, trying to improve a specific position of weakness.
I think also Nolan is on a pretty sizable contract of $260,000.
Wait, what?
But like
hold on. Do that again. what's Nolan Arenado's contract?
Man, $60,000 would be for just a little bit over my condo.
He agreed to an 8-year, $260 million contract extension with the Rockies.
I don't know why I said $1,000. I was just like looking at it really quickly, like, oh, shit, we should pull this up.
All right, why are leaders get paid more?
In which case, Nolan has every right to be pissed at the front office.
No, he's getting $260,000
less than a minor leaguer. anyway, continue your thought.
Minor leaguers make what, like $35K a year? Less than that?
Give or take. It depends on how long they've been in the system.
Yeah, the minor leaguers really don't make a lot of money. No.
Nick was talking about the plug and play, Kyle Seager, Justin Turner. For me, I'm not a big fan of that pretty much at all, because we do have Starlin Castro and Astrobal Cabrera, who obviously aren't quite as good, but I think could fill the void enough that they can just go in-house. Justin Turner and Seager are pretty old, so they they're on the back end of their careers anyway, so they probably only have a year or two left. And if that's the case, I'd rather just keep it inside and not get rid of our farm system that's already pretty weak.
What if Starlin Castro struggles this season? Are you then akin to like just paying Justin Turner for a year and then letting him go and then trying to find a better option in the next offseason?
No. I mean, I'd still rather run it with Cabrera or Starlin Castro than, like I said, get rid of the very small amount of pieces they have to begin with.
What about like, other guys?
If they had a deeper farm system, I'd be more okay with it, but the Nationals farm system is not great right now. Like, they only have a couple of guys that are top tier end, and those guys are still a couple years off from even touch on the MLB.
Isn't the top tier in their farm system mainly the pitchers that are coming up for the minor leagues?
Yeah,
for the Nats?
Well, Luis Garcia, other than Keyboom, Luis Garcia is probably their number one guy, and he plays shortstop, so he's kind of screwed right now either way. Like, he's, I mean, he didn't have a great season last year, so he'll have some more time to build up, but
he's only like 19, right?
Yeah.
He's got some time.
Yeah, I mean, and like, it's not like they got Trey Turner over there at shortstop, so he doesn't have to rush through the system yet.
Yeah.
Which is so nice. You know, but
I think Trey will be here long term for shortstop, but second base, you've got Castro on what, a 2-year deal, so Luis Garcia could be slated for that eventually. You never know.
Yeah, I mean, Denneberg and Rutledge are there two other guys that Rutledge I'm really excited for. I think he's going to be a future, potentially a future ace, I think. They just drafted him last year in the first round. He's their first pick.
Do you see benefit in potentially like trading off Keyboom and Cabby, like just kind of them going back and forth at third base?
I guess like that's probably what they'll end up doing if Keyboom doesn't do great. Like I don't see them sending him back down because they've already tried that once. So basically, I think that if he struggles this year, they'll probably just platoon him for his contract and then get rid of him most likely if he doesn't pan out.
Going back to Rutledge, he's from University of Arkansas, and he's actually like a tall dude, like 6'8".
Did this man just say
Arkansas? God, I am just fucking up on this podcast left and right. Can we restart this like from the beginning?
No, keep going. We're doing this live.
He is 6'8". He is taller than most quarterbacks in the NFL.
He's a flamethrower, too.
Strasburg is what, like 6'5", 6'6"?
6'6", I thought, for Strasburg. And then Scherzer's shorter than him, I remember. Yeah.
Scherzer's like 6'2".
Yeah, but
yeah, Strasburg's 6'5".
Rutledge will probably be in AA or AAA this year for the entire year. I don't see them ever calling him up. Unless if they're way out of the race, maybe they'll call him up. But
pitchers, does fate really play into pitching? Like, how would it be? Like, is it a disadvantage to be a taller pitcher?
Not really.
They're tall guys. They're short guys. Gio was pretty short, wasn't he?
I mean, being a pitcher, like, you could pretty much be any size. I mean, it's not a very athletic position. You don't have to be. Like, you've seen some pretty fat pitchers, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Bartolo Colon.
Yeah.
Bartolo Colon. Yo, I just hope that nobody tries to, like, fuck with Jackson Rutledge. Like, hypothetically, if Rutledge, like, like hits someone on the shoulder and the batter's like, all right, come on, let's go, and then Rutledge starts gunning for him and you see a 6'8" pitcher coming at you like, no, I'm good, I don't want to fight.
But that someone would charge the mound and then he would like run backwards. He's like, oh my god, he's taller than I expected. He looks so short back there. What happened?
And then he tries to fight Nolan Arenado, and then he's just like, I only get paid $260,000 for this.
Anyway, let's
go ahead and move on and talk a little bit more about the upcoming season. So we know now officially that we got three MLB divisions, the West, the Central, and the East, expanded playoffs. If you guys were the decision makers in the MLB, how would you divide up the teams, like their divisions? Do you think this is good, like based on geography? Would you do it a different way? How would you go about it? Chris?
I like the idea. I think it'll keep it competitive and like it'll make the season easier on players and teams, especially with a shortened season that's already going to have its mark on history no matter what we do. I've seen a couple that are just East, Central, and West with like, I mean, obviously, like the Nats and the Phillies and the Yankees and Red Sox all in the same division. So I think that's a pretty cool idea. And it'll be fun to at least like it'll be entertaining at the very least to have this sort of situation set up.
And the purpose of doing a three division season is to limit the travel for each of those divisions, right? Is that what the idea is?
Yeah, and also like I think because they might shorten series up, I'm not 100% sure, but
yeah, I don't think anyone is.
Yeah, I mean they haven't really. Nobody official has been like, yeah, we're thinking about this. It's still pretty much speculated. There's not a lot of ground, solid, concrete evidence of what they're gonna do this year. I think they're just throwing ideas around and seeing what sticks right now. Because I mean, yeah, we still aren't really that close to being able to play. We're still at least a month out. So I think as soon as like we start to get the go ahead, we'll start actually seeing like real news about it from MLB.
I think I'm pretty like old man on the lawn kind of thing about this. Like I hate when like it's even brought up on the football level about like changing divisions or changing conferences to introduce teams or something like that. I'd rather just like everything keep the same and just keep it historic. I don't really care about expanded playoffs. Like they could do that. Same thing for football. But it just kind of messes with kind of like statistics and like player like season records and stuff like that. So it's kind of like iffy, but yeah,
I mean, this season's always going to be.
Yeah, this season you can like, pretty much throw out because if coronavirus continues as is, then there's not really going to be many things for the record books here.
I mean, it's going to be a crazy season no matter what they do.
Yeah.
So. Personally, I want to see Juan Soto get the most home runs during a pandemic stat because no one else is ever going to own that.
An interesting point, Varun, because when they had that strike shortened season for football, they kind of threw out all the stats for it because they were like, oh, it didn't really count because it wasn't a full NFL season.
Well,
so they might be doing the same thing for baseball.
Yeah, the 1982 season, the MVP was Mark Mosley, who was the Redskins kicker.
Yeah,
you know, it's kind of interesting because all bets are off. You don't know what could happen, and it is kind of entertaining.
I mean, baseball, there's a lot more averages and statistics like that than in football. Like, in baseball, the cold stats, the run score, the RBIs, all that, the counting stats are not as important anymore as they once were with sabermetrics and all that sort of stuff. So, honestly, like, I think, the counting stats, yeah, those are going to get messed up, but, like, OPS, average, WAR, BWAR, all that stuff. I mean, that's not going to get affected by a shortened season for the most part.
All right, guys, let's go ahead and move on to talking about the sophomore slump. For those of you that don't know what a sophomore slump is, it's when an athlete in their second year playing tends to perform worse than their rookie season. So with that in mind, a couple questions for you all. Who do you guys think are some Nats players, current and past, that hit the sophomore slump, and do you think our ace in the hole, Juan Soto, overcame the sophomore slump? Rahul, let's start with you.
I think Soto kind of did, but like I think the sophomore slump is kind of a fallacy. Like we really do notice when a player somehow declines after their pretty good freshman year, and I don't really think it exists in any sport, but I kind of thought I would bring it up because it's kind of like one of those like old like wives tales, like those myths that you hear. It's like, oh, this player went through this and that kind of thing. I think it's just kind of their player value will fluctuate year to year, and it's really just a coincidence if it goes down in their sophomore year.
Yeah, I also don't think there's much of a sophomore slump in baseball, but I do think it's more common for there to be just general team slumps. We've seen that pretty consistently with the Nationals over the last few years, where there's a time period, whether it's, you know, the middle of the year or the beginning of the year, where they just don't come out and play well, and it really just impacts everybody, not just one person. You know, like I kind of think back to a year ago when Scherzer was pitching well, but his record was like 1-6 because nobody was hitting properly. But, you know, Soto kind of still managed to hit his dingers and his RBIs that year. But, you know, he's pretty much 2 full years into his career, and his plate discipline's gotten better and better, and I think that's really what his major strength is. So I think the fact that he can maintain that discipline at the plate will help him, and I don't think he'll slump any more so than just the general team slumping from time to time. So that's kind of what I think.
So I disagree with both of you. I see a lot of, or not a lot, but a solid amount of sophomore slumps, especially in a sport like baseball. Because as a pitcher, you're coming up in the MLB and batters haven't faced you before. And the more they face you, the more comfortable they will be at the plate. So, you know, your first year in the league, nobody's seen you. It's going to be a lot easier to get guys out. They won't know your pitch sequence. And then on the flip side, as a batter, other teams aren't going to know how to get you out at first. They're just going to have to pitch you without any real scouting report. So that's why after the first year, you'll see a downturn in a lot of stats in MLB. I mean, just look at Yordan Alvarez, who torched the MLB the first couple of months this year, and then he kind of fell off the edge of the earth, ending with a series against the Yankees of 12 strikeouts and one hit, which I think shows that even as a rookie of the year, I think he's about to have a pretty meh season this year just because of that and because he's not cheating.
Yep.
Well, yeah.
Two reasons there.
I was going to say the sophomore, it's like Astros will be able to tell what signs you're making in real time.
As opposed also to your the second discussion we were having was with Juan Soto, but I do agree with you all on that. He's already pretty much been in the league for 2 years, and I think Juan Soto is just a different type of hitter that, I mean, he was going towards a sophomore slump because he couldn't hit a off speed pitch to save his life or a breaking ball to save his life, and then he kind of learned how to do that. Now teams won't throw him off speed or breaking balls anymore because he hits them so well.
Works like that.
He adapts very quickly.
Yes, that's why I don't think he'll have, if you can even call it a sophomore slump at this point, I don't think he'll have a sophomore slump because he's always trying to make himself better and learn. Right now, he just has to work some more on his defense, honestly. That's his biggest thing.
Plus, he's great at mind games, like with the slide, the Soto shuffle. He grabs his nuts and he's like, yo, throw me an off pitch real quick.
I also will say that those kind of like year in year out like differences in performances are usually exacerbated when your player is like younger. So maybe Soto will like have that slump kind of period during this year if we do have baseball. But it's kind of like what you see in other sports, like basketball and also football.
He's gonna have a slump at some point. Like he's not a god. Like he's good, but
false. I mean,
wait, he's not a god. Are you even a Nats fan?
I mean, he'll have a downturn at some point or another. That's the nature of the game.
True. All right, one more quick topic I want to talk about in regards to baseball. Talking about who may potentially throw the first pitch for Game One. Who do y'all? There's plenty of options. Dr. Fauci. Jose Andres, our president, like there's definitely several options, but who do you all see throw on the first pitch?
Speaking of our president, do you remember George W. Bush's presidential pitch that went flying out of his hand?
Yeah.
Oh, like I've watched that YouTube like a million times. It's so funny.
That wasn't great.
He's got a rocket.
He's got a rocket. No one knows where it's going.
He just doesn't aim in the right place.
His heart's in the right place, though.
I feel like Jose Andre would be the choice to go because he was such a big part of the playoff run. And then bringing him back for opening day after he's done all this charitable work for the community during the coronavirus, I think that's the obvious option, I think.
Yeah, I agree. I think he's a really good pick. I don't think you can go wrong with Riverboat Ron either.
Riverboat Ron.
If they have Riverboat Ron throwing out the first pitch, I'm done.
How crazy would it be if they somehow flew in Para from Japan to throw out the first pitch.
There are a bunch of safety reasons for that one, why they probably can't do that rule. But it would be a cool moment.
Wait, why?
Especially if he had a game in Japan at that time, they just like took him out of the game. It's like, oh, sorry, you have to do something much more important.
Throw the first pitch while Baby Shark plays.
I see him being more of a second or third. I bet you they'll bring him back for a opening day pitch when he's got some time off or something at some point.
He's got to get a ring too.
I wouldn't be surprised if we see him back at the stadium sometime within the next year or two.
Yeah, I think so. He's got to get his ring somehow.
Yeah, true. Yeah, they'll do that. Yeah,
true. But yeah, lots of good options. Anyway, let's move into some football. It's always sunny in Redskins Park, and the gang got drafted. God.
2020. Jesus Christ.
It's always a goddamn rainstorm at Redskins Park where people are putting out awful statements and people are getting hurt and people are getting fired.
And the field is a slip and slide, as we saw in Alex Smith's documentary.
People are developing poor football habits.
So are we actually going to talk about the topic or are we just going to meander?
Honestly, I don't want to talk about the topic. I just want to talk about Nick going on
about being a Redskins fan for the Washington Redskins.
Anyway, 2020 rookie class has gotten their jersey numbers. So I guess I'll go ahead and start from the top. So we got Chase Young, who got number 99. A notable player who has number 99 is a guy named J.J. Watt. Maybe you all heard of him. Maybe you haven't.
Never heard of him.
All right. So we got next up. We got Antonio Gibson, number 24. So a notable former Redskins player.
Okay. So Antonio Gibson. So previously, the player that had it on the Redskins was one Josh El Saltador. Norman means a jumper in Spanish because he jumped over a bull in the offseason before he was cut. Really, the smartest professional move. But
thank you for his tenure, no problem.
Yeah. But, like, hopefully Gibson will bring honor back to the 24 standard. And I thought he was going to get Chris Thompson's 25 because they're kind of similar players in how they would be. Scott Turner's offense versus Jay Gruden's offense. But Flavin Morrow actually switched to that number, allegedly.
And they want to bring class back to 24, and Antonio Gibson is the man. He'll bring that class back.
Yeah, that class. He'll bring it back.
You're saying Josh Norman wasn't classy?
Well, it was indicative of ownership and the era.
All right, moving on. Let's talk about the next player who got their jersey. Sadiq Charles, number 77. Notable player there, Willie Nasty Rofe, Hall of Fame tackle for the Saints and the Chiefs.
Who?
You don't know who Willie Rofe is?
No.
He's a Louisiana Tech tackle. The Hall of Famer, the big goddamn.
Didn't the Redskins have a 77 that played like shit? Like, what was his name? Sean LaVau. Yeah, that was him.
That was him, yeah. But I don't, for some reason, I don't think he's picking up 77 to represent Sean LaVau. Sorry, Sean LaVau, if you're listening to this podcast.
I don't think he's picking 77 to go with really Rofe either.
I think he is, because he's actually from, Louisiana Tech legendary tackle. Sadiq Charles is actually from Louisiana before he had to get relocated because of Hurricane Katrina. I wouldn't be surprised if he actually took 77 in homage of his hero.
From LSU. So that would probably make some sense.
All right, moving down. We have
Rofe didn't actually go to LSU, though.
I know, Louisiana. But you said Louisiana, so.
Yeah, because Charles is from Louisiana. He was born there.
Yeah, and he went to LSU, which.
Yeah. He had an offer from Georgia or something, because he relocated to there during the hurricane or something like the lines. I have to look that up, but yeah. He went back to Louisiana, his home place.
That's beautiful.
All right. Next player, Antonio Gandy. Next player, Antonio Gandy Golden. He received number 10. Previous player for that one, Paul Richardson.
Let's hope he stays healthy, unlike the last guy that wore number 10.
God, number 10, our previous. He had bones of glass. Like, every day was pain. It's like that SpongeBob episode. You know, the marketing one, Varun?
Yeah.
The marketing one?
Yeah, you know, where they're going door-to-door selling chocolate bars?
Yes, yes. That would be stale.
Is this a sports podcast or a sports podcast or a fucking SpongeBob podcast?
We can make it a SpongeBob podcast. We're flexible.
Welcome into the DC Sports Bikini Bottom Brain Trust. All right. Anyway, moving down. We got Keith Ishmael, who got number 60. A notable player that had number 60 was Chuck Benarek of the Chuck Benarek Award, as well as Otto Graham, so that's pretty cool.
So we're using a defensive player as an example for the fact that our center got 60.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But also Otto Graham, a Hall of Fame QB. Mm. Honestly, I think they just gave him 60 because it looked good on him.
Just some notable players that have had that jersey number.
Yeah, right, I thought we were going to talk about the notable players, but we can move on.
All right, let's move on to Kaliki Hudson, who received the jersey number of 47.
Anyway, 47, great. Just like Chris Cooley. So Chris Cooley will be thrilled that a top-end defensive back and linebacker hybrid who really is a piece of shit and should have been undrafted.
Holy shit.
That was too far.
Damn.
That was a little too far. That was too far. Anyways, Chris Cooley is being disrespected with this.
Anyway, moving on. Let's talk about Cameron Curl, who received number 31. Parent, he's a big Sean Taylor fan and combined Sean Taylor's jersey numbers, supposedly 36 and 21. So that's pretty cool that they want to
pay tribute to
Redskins legend Sean Taylor.
I think that's a very original thing to do. I don't think any safety that's ever been drafted by the Redskins or signed by the Redskins have ever paid homage to the legend Sean Taylor. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's kind of never, really. But he'll probably try and get 36 when Josh Ferguson, the running back that we signed last year, after we got a spate of injuries, gets cut.
Roster.
Rounding out the Redskins draft picks jersey numbers, James Smith Williams got number 72. A previous player that had that was Donald Penn, offensive tackle. But there's rumors, right, that he may change to a new number?
I don't think there's really rumors, but he didn't have that same number in college. In college, the numbering system for defensive end and kind of linebacker is a lot different than it is in the NFL, so I just assume that he would change it. Donald Penn also is still a free agent. He might be signed by the Redskins sometime in the future as they try and see how bad Jerron Christian is at playing left tackle. And they may get an injury at that position, so they might sign back Donald Penn for some insurance.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Do you think there's a chance that Penn will come back out of retirement to play another year with us?
He's actually not retired technically. I think he's still a free agent. He's just looking for a position. Yeah.
He wasn't that bad. I mean, he was very serviceable.
No, he was serviceable, but the thing about Donald Penn was because of his age and just kind of the number of injuries he's had in his career, you couldn't really use him like you would, I hate to say it, but like how you would use Trent Williams on like screens and stuff like that to run out in space. You were more limited to kind of just like running on the right side of the line instead. And also just kind of using him as pass protector and occasionally have RBs chip with him just
that
to make his job
why
easier.
Game's been so bad lately because you're running toward Morgan Moses' side.
Possibly also because our passing game was so bad that everyone knew we were going to run it all the time.
All right, one last topic I want to talk to you all about in regards to Redskins football. Trent Williams, as we know, is no longer on the Skins. He was traded to the 49ers for a 2020 fifth rounder and a 2021 third rounder. Kind of a less than you expect deal, because Trent Williams was once an all-star player in the league. Still kind of is.
Well, I'll take the reins on this briefly. I'm sure Rahul will want to touch on it as well. But
Rahul is seething right now, by the way. Like,
Ron Rivera, Ron Rivera came out and confirmed that at the trade deadline last season that there was an offer on the table to trade Trent Williams for a first-round pick, and we told that team to fuck off. You know why? Because Bruce Allen has a fucking ego, and he was like, I will not be disrespected by this guy that doesn't want to play, so he's just going to sit on his ass. I'm not going to better the team and trade him away for a first-round pick, which was fair value for him. Instead, I'm going to sit him, and he's going to learn a lesson because I don't give a shit about my team. I give a shit about my ego, and that's it. And
Bruce Allen really did blend his feelings into this business transaction. Honestly, he should have shipped him to Cleveland for that first rounder as soon as he could. Bruce Allen thought he could just wait him out and keep on fining him for not showing up to camp. And obviously that didn't work out as expected, and Bruce Allen is now fired. But I just want to say that even after all of this drama with Bruce Allen and with the Redskins, the agent for Trent Williams also kind of made the whole situation worse by just leaking stuff to the radio and leaking stuff all around, being like, the Redskins wouldn't let us trade Trent Williams, or it's like this and that. And it was a lot of manufactured drama about the situation. So the Kyle Smith and Ron Rivera, they just wanted Trent Williams off their hands. So he went for a third and a fifth.
Yeah, I'm glad.
Yeah, that's why. Like, the third and the fifth rounder, I think, is better. Like I mentioned a little bit in last week's episode. I think it's a solid return on a guy that pretty much everybody knew was on his way out. The Redskins were trying to get rid of. So I feel like all things considered, it ends up not being that bad. I mean, obviously, you still want that first round pick, but.
We'd be able to recover the second rounder that we used for Montez Sweat by trading Trent Williams for a second, and I thought that would have been a good deal. And I was kind of making fun of this transaction that the Seahawks made for Jordan Brooks. Like, if they're going to spend a first round pick on a run stuffing linebacker, why don't they just send that to us for Trent Williams? That would have been a lot better use of their resources.
Yeah, maybe. I do agree with you, Chris. I do think that Trent's value was not what a lot of Redskins fans thought it was, because when you look at him on the field in all the years that he played here, and he played like a top three left tackle in the NFL, but there are just so many questions about his injury history, his age. He hasn't played in a year, and then the fact that he's only got 1 year left on his deal and he wants to be paid, he wants to be continuously paid top money. So there are a lot of questions there. So I do think, I do think his value was whatever the word is. I can't even think.
Low?
Yeah.
Minimal?
It was devalued.
But on the other hand, the 49ers were in a sticky situation as well, because their left tackle, Staley, who's been at their left tackle spot for like so many years, did retire. So, and they really needed a replacement that they couldn't find in the draft.
Well, I think that's why they ended up getting a third and a fifth versus, like, I thought that they were going to end up getting like a fourth and a seventh of next year's. So they got the fifth.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. I felt like they could have bent the 49ers even more and asked for a second rounder.
Maybe, but.
But they wanted him off their hands.
The Redskins were also trying to dump him really badly, so I think they were both kind of feeling the pressure, and they wanted to just get a deal done.
The teams were closing on Trent. There were very, very few teams that needed a tackle once the first round had gone by.
Yeah.
top four left tackles were off the board.
It kind of felt like the season before, where the Dolphins were trying to deal for Josh Rosen. And the everyone knew as soon as the Cardinals picked Kyler Murray that Josh Rosen was on the table. So they were all kind of like vying up to take that, give them their best trade offer to get that.
I mean, as soon as teams know you're 100% trying to dump someone, their value immediately starts to go down.
Yeah. It's like sharks smelling blood in the water.
Yeah.
Speaking of sharks smelling blood in the water, the Wizards are going to win next season. Moving on to DC basketball, let's talk about the Wizards real quick. Messing with salary cap numbers, we got the biggest contracts are Bradley Beal and John Wall, but the Wizards need more pieces in order to become contenders again. So in that case, like, who do you all see them bringing in? For a center position, let's say big free agent centers.
So this is kind of tricky. I think they're probably their best answers through the draft. I'm not really sure about how they would play with that, but it's just kind of interesting. As you mentioned, how they were messing with their cap numbers, and Bradley Beal and John Wall are the biggest pieces of their cap. They tried to be inventive this past season with bringing in players like old injured Isaiah Thomas to see if that would work out, and clearly that didn't pan. It's all these other solutions, but this is kind of their year to go forward if John Wall's leg is back or knee is back up to speed, because Bradley Beal's playing his mind out, and he was last year, and you could just like build on that momentum, and you also have a promising rookie who played last year and that could take the next step in his sophomore year and hopefully not have a sophomore slump, as we were talking about in baseball. Yep.
Well, I think
Merle Schofield, but yeah, Rui Hachimura.
Oh.
A lot of this season was really bringing in young, cheap guys to compete. It's really the road the Redskins are on this upcoming season, but for the Wizards, it was bringing in, you know, guys like Ish Smith and Davis Bertans and Isaac Bonga, you know, like the guys that haven't done a whole lot in the league and really seeing what they can do and who can fight for time and who can actually show some decent skill set, I guess. You know, it's there's something to build on at least, but you do have the contracts of Beal and Wall. And, you know, you hope Wall comes back. So, yeah. I don't know, we'll see.
If John Wall comes back like he was before he was injured, I think they have a real shot, a playoff spot, and maybe even more. But if John Wall doesn't come back to where he was, I think they're in a bit more trouble. But they have the pieces with or without John Wall, I think. I mean, obviously John Wall will help, but
I think they're a lot better off now going in the direction of Tommy Shepard rather than the direction they were going in with Ernie. Because similarly, Ernie would bring in these guys that were older and didn't have as much to contribute. You know, but they're big names, and you put them into the starting lineup, and you know, you had Bradley Beal and John Wall, but I think some of these other guys were kind of weighing you down. So I think what this competition really does, it puts you in a much better spot for next season with Wall and Beal both healthy, and there's going to be more depth. There's going to be more of an emphasis on the guys coming off the bench and playing full games, you know, rather than hoping that you get enough out of your two stars and hoping the rest kind of just make it work.
I'd argue, though, that the competition really didn't bring out the best center that we had. And we have to go through a free agent / draft approach to get that big man in our team to support them.
We definitely need a new center. The Wizards need a new center, I think, through the draft or maybe through free agency, although
Serge Ibaka is available.
Andre Drummond also has a player option. If he wants to go back, he's probably going to go back to the Nets, but who knows? And then also, I mean, Anthony Davis will also technically be on the table, but I think he's probably going back to LA.
Yeah, no, he's going back to LA.
But that's probably your top two right there for centers is Drummond and Davis, and both those guys are probably sticking with their teams. And other than that, like, I mean, it's pretty shallow for centers this year. Mm-hmm. So I'd be more okay with them just sticking with somebody in the draft, a big man in the draft.
Yeah, a lot of good stuff potentially on the come up for the Wizards, so hopefully they're able to work it out. Let's round it out with hockey. Talk about Ovi, his stats, his numbers. Do you all think that Ovi is the greatest athlete in Washington sports history?
Straight up athlete, yes. Like,
it's kind of hard to say, like, even that, like, straight up athlete, because, like, there's a lot of players in, like, Skins history. I'm not really sure about, because relatively in Nationals history, unless you, like, consider, like, before they were in Washington. I mean,
if we're talking just, like, being an athlete, I think, like, just the definition of the word of being an athlete, I think hockey just, like, is a more athletic sport than football and baseball. So him being so dominant in a sport that takes so much athleticism for so long, all throughout history, for the Redskins or Nats or Wizards, I think it's just, it's hard to argue.
For the Redskins... Yeah,
different sport other than hockey. To be the number one.
For the Redskins, you could potentially say Darryl Green is the greatest.
Yeah, I would say that just because his speed was like on another level, like that was like unheard of at the time. I guess he had Deion Sanders, but yeah.
Yeah,
just a couple of things. 4.440, Pro Football Hall of Fame, first team All Pro, 2-time champion. Redskins all-time leader in picks, tackles, games played, and consecutive seasons. And just I just want to round this out also with Ovi as well. He is a 3-time NHL MVP. He's 7-time first team all NHL, all-time Caps leader in goals, power play goals, points, game-winning goals.
Yeah, no, Ovi, he's also a Stanley Cup. If you were like trying to compare them as like players, like Green is one of the best cornerbacks in the NFL of all time, but Ovi is like one of the best hockey players in the whole sport of all time. So it's like,
yeah,
in terms of players, it's like Ovi is clearly way above, but like in terms of like freak athletes, like when you think about like people who are like fast or strong, I think there's like a lot more, like it's not so clear cut. In terms
I
of
think
OVP.
It's even more clear cut, to be honest.
Really?
Okay. Yeah, because as a DB, like you are playing the ball, but hockey is one of the most. You have to be a freak athlete the most in hockey versus any other sport. So just beginning with hockey, like I think a hockey player in general is more athletic than a football player, in all standards. Unless, I mean, maybe goalie, if you're playing goalie, like that would be the only argument that I think a football player could be straight up more athletic.
Yeah.
And this was kind of a question that was asked on the Facebook post by Max. He asked a question for our top 100 athletes, which we don't have time for that per se.
No, we don't.
But I have talked to Max about this conversation a solid amount. And it's a really interesting conversation for like if being a straight up like freak athlete and what sport requires the most athleticism, like baseball, probably not athletes. Like, I mean, we talked about fat pitchers earlier, like you can be pretty fat and play.
Yeah, baseball is definitely more about the skill level. Than the athleticism.
Hand-eye coordination is like pretty much 100% of baseball. And then, I mean, some speed, but you don't need this. You're not hitting people constantly, which is the other reason why I think hockey is also a more athletic sport than football. Because, I mean, as a DB, you are hitting people, but hockey, you're hitting people every single play. I mean, there's a reason why hockey players only play 2 to 3 minutes and they have to be off the ice for like 5 minutes. Or not that long, but like 2 to 3 minutes as well.
Yeah, I don't know. I just disagree because if for hockey versus football, like in just terms of athletes, there's a ton of like pure athletes that go into football and like never pan out because of that. Like, it's one thing to be like a fast player and like be a bigger player, but if you don't have the skill to marry your talent or are able to be coached to that level, you're pretty much useless and are going to ride the bench for the rest of your career.
Well, like, yeah.
Shortly and after.
But you're also talking about how it's being a good football player is different than being a good athlete. Like, you can be a good athlete and go into any sport, I think, and at least be like serviceable. But I mean, you're not going to be dominant just off of being a good athlete in any sport.
Right. But what I described, I think that happens more in hockey versus like you being an amazing athlete, but you just can't pan it out and just get cut than it does in the NFL. Like, I think that just being super hyper athletic, teams will find a way to fit you. It's just, it's not going to be the same thing in the NHL.
Well, what do you think, Vern? Like, what's your opinions on it?
Hey, you can step off your moderator podium.
I just feel like for every sport, there's a different set of guidelines and template that you want in terms of athleticism and skill. And I think it's really a combination of both. And the only way you can really judge like greatest DC sports athlete for me or just in general is based on their accomplishments as opposed to potentially the skill gap. Like, they're like OV, I would argue, is the best DC sports athlete of all time just because of all of his accomplishments and the fact that he is on track to just break even more records than he has before. I mean, he is coming for Gretzky's records. Will he get there? Only time will tell. But based on accomplishments alone, I think Ovi is the best of all time.
But to go back on what you just said about like how different sports would have like different requirements or benchmarks for athletes, like when you go and compare football to rugby, football values players that have explosiveness, that can do a lot within a short period of time because a play really only lasts a few seconds. So you need like those players that can like have like gigantic like explosion, like they can come out of 4-point or 3-point stance and just like burst, or they can run routes very quickly. So that's versus rugby, where like you need to be able to have sustained play throughout and like be ready for that big moment, like to play at your best. So it's like that different kind of standard. It's like football more emphasizes burst than I would say long speed and being able to sustain yourself for a long time.
No, yeah, right. I definitely agree with you. And those differences makes it really hard to equate two athletes in two different sports just because there's different prioritizations of skills and athleticism that you need. A burst, it's like a sprint versus a marathon. Football's a sprint, rugby's a marathon. You need two different types of mentalities, two different types of play styles when you're approaching it.
Right. And what I'm saying here is that hockey is more of a marathon than a sprint compared to football. Football is definitely more sprint than marathon. And hockey is more marathon than sprint.
Hockey, that's why they only play for like a minute. Hockey's a sprint the whole time you're on the ice.
It's true. They got players going in and out. I mean, even then, hockey's only three periods as opposed to four.
They have longer periods.
Yeah, they're longer. Like, so, the time kind of equates.
It's still the same amount of game time.
That's yeah.
True.
But, I mean, burst is a football thing versus athleticism, I think, is the combination of strength, speed, agility, and, like, mental awareness. And, I mean, hockey, you go, 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 go the entire time. Football, you do get those, like, 10 seconds of rest, 20 seconds of rest between each play, and you go, 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 go for about 5 or 10 seconds. I think it's just hockey is just so much more of an athletic sport than football is. That's not to say that football is obviously not athletic, but I just think hockey is
also
more so.
Disagreeing with that in terms of the people who would have access to hockey, I feel like more people like growing up in America, like just from like various backgrounds, have access to football than they would have for hockey. Like, there's kind of a gate in terms of equipment and, like, having players or having coaches to sponsor you.
What does that have to do with athleticism, though?
Because you're gating, like, the population that gets to play the sport. You're not getting the whole population, the best athlete, out of them. They might be going to a different sport.
I would say that's definitely a factor based on accessibility.
Like, yeah, and, like, out of all of those, soccer beats out all of them because all you need is a ball to play soccer. We're not arguing that soccer gets you the best athlete, but soccer probably gets you the most technical, I would put it, the best marathon athlete as opposed to the best sprinting athlete.
Never mind.
No, bring it up, Chris. We debate.
I think you're arguing for being a good at a sport versus being a good straight up athlete. You're talking about being good at football, being good at hockey, being good at soccer versus just being a athlete. Like a boxer, I think, or like UFC is pretty much the definition of just being an athlete of speed, strength, agility, and mental toughness. Obviously, like, a UFC guy isn't going to be that great at something like baseball, where straight up athleticism isn't as important.
But going to like UFC and boxing, speed's not as valued as much as quickness is. Like being able to be quick rather than like running around in circles or like running in a straight line. And that's like
it's a different set of guidelines. It's a different standard.
Right. No, but it's also a different set of skills that you're using.
Guideline.
One more time.
That's what I'm saying is you all are arguing, like you're saying a guideline for a sport. That's being good at that sport versus being a good straight up athlete.
I see what you mean. Yeah, no, that makes sense.
I sort of get what you mean. I sort of don't. I think that's my own fault. But I feel like different, like as you're going through each sport, they emphasize different things that you would require to be the best in that sport. So yeah, that's just kind of where my stance is. So it's like that's like going into like the complexity of the argument, like hard to argue who is the greatest athlete. But yeah.
Well, that's why I think it's a little bit easier to argue it than saying like who's the best at their like arguing.
Because you're saying that hockey is the most demanding sport out of all of them.
Out of the Power Four, yeah, I think hockey's the most demanding for athleticism versus football would probably be number two, and then baseball and soccer would probably be somewhere at 3 or 4.
We don't even mention basketball. We
didn't even acknowledge basketball.
Oh, well, yeah. Basketball would also be...
basketball is like... right there. I feel like there's a height gate for basketball. Like, you need to be, like, this certain, like, amount of height to be...
that's being good at the sport. That's not being an athlete.
But that's, like, being born into that sport or something, like, having the genetics or anything like that to be, like, all right, you're going to be in basketball because you've reached this height and stuff like that.
Topic. But anyway, I want to finish this off since we did mention on social media that we wanted to hear from our listeners, wanted to answer some questions here. So I kind of want to address a few of those questions. So let's start with actually two questions from Phoenix. Who is more likely to get the next DC Sports Championship, the Caps or the Nats?
Between those two, I would say the Nats. Partially because I'm just like thinking about like the championship parade, and that's like still in my head and everything. And I'm like, wow, the Nats could beat everyone. And like, yeah, I don't know. I feel like it's still the Nats, but they're not even the favorites to win conference. Isn't that right, Chris?
Yeah. The Braves are the favorites to win as the division stand right now. The Braves would be my pick for the division, and honestly might be my pick for the World Series this year. Them or the Dodgers are pretty much, the Dodgers would probably be my pick.
I think the Dodgers would be, they're just full stacked.
But I'd say the Caps because they just have more, their lineup's more put together, I think, than the Nats are right now. I'd kind of have to see the beginning of this season. Like, if we had played this season up until now, I think I could say with more confidence. But I'd still say the Caps are closer just because of their winning their division year in and year out, and the Nats are not right now.
Yeah. I would say, like, kind of a sleeper pick for this is the Wizards. And this is why, like, we were arguing about how they need a center. But, like, they have two, like, amazing players on the Wizards right now, just kind of hampered by their head coach. And they have a really good rookie that's in the wings. Like, yeah, I mean, they have all the makings of, like, an excellent team that can contend and, like, make it to the championship.
If John Wall comes back as good as he was, I think they're a top three conference team.
Yeah, agree.
If he doesn't, I think they're 6th to 8th next season.
Yeah, I would still put them. Yeah, you would say, like, in the top 10, even if you, like, you get, like, if you get, like, 80% John Wall, that's a top 10 team.
Yeah, I think that's still a playoff team right there. Is if John Wall comes back, just meh, I think that's still a playoff team.
But, yeah, but if you have 100% John Wall, I think that is a top three team. Yeah, I think
that'd be a top three, especially if they pick up somebody as a center.
I think the Redskins are definitely the worst off. They haven't really made any like free agent acquisition. They're just kind of like taking in all these old guys and then like bringing in rookies to see what they have, and then Rivera will decide what direction they want to go in.
That's just because the Wizards are a little bit further along in the rebuild than the Redskins are. The Redskins are literally, I mean, this is pretty much their first year of downright straight-up rebuild. Or last year was their first year of straight-up rebuild.
I wouldn't even, I think that was like, just the decline. It was just like, oh God, everything's going to shit.
That year was the year that they were like, all right, we're not even going to try this year. We're not going to make any signings. We're not going to make any trades for good players. Like, we're just going to tank this year and get a good draft pick.
Yeah.
So this is the first year for the Redskins that we'll see, like, hey, what can these young guys on this team do? Because, I mean, they've got to have one of the younger teams in the NFL at this point.
It's funny you mentioned that kind of like tank, because there is some rumors coming out that Callahan didn't even really like Bill Callahan, the interim head coach, a previous offensive line head coach, now actually went to Cleveland. But as the Redskins interim head coach, he didn't even care about winning games. He just wanted to get Adrian Peterson to 1,000 yards rushing. I think that was more of his concern. And I don't even think Adrian Peterson reached that.
I think he was like eight yards shorter, 9 yards short.
Yeah, it was very close.
That guy's had a long, storied career. You know, if he's still able to break a couple more records with the Redskins giving him the ball a little bit more than he should right now, like, yeah, why not?
So just to quickly answer the second question, who will take the longest to get a championship, the Skins or the Wizards?
I mean, the Skins, yeah.
Yeah, the Skins.
All right.
That's by no means the I don't think the Wizards are going to win it within 3 years.
And this is like a bigger topic, like just like parity. But like, I think basketball is just doesn't have as much parity as football. I say that as the Patriots have been crushing everyone for like the past decade, in the Super Bowl, but it's like, because of that nature in basketball versus football, I'd say the Redskins are kind of like, they could contend, but it would be like kind of like out of the blue, like it somehow came and they contended.
Like the Titans this year.
Yeah, like the Titans, like they came out of nowhere and then they had Derrick Henry run over everyone in the playoffs.
Or the Nats.
The Nats weren't out of the blue, bro. Yeah.
Well, the Nats, like once they turned that like historic comeback, were they still an underdog after the wild card?
Oh yeah,
bro, they were an underdog.
They were supposed to win against the Brewers. The Brewers were the only team that they were supposed to beat.
Yeah,
which was the toughest match actually, though, against the Brewers. I would say that was like the because that was the I felt like the Cardinals was kind of more of a
the Cardinals are in a pretty shaky division, or they were. They're in a better. I mean, they're better. The division is a little bit better now.
Bro, no one remembers the NLCS from last year.
Remember, Ani Ballum was getting a no-hitter. Like, that was a huge start for the team.
I groaned audibly when he didn't get that no-hitter. I was like,
the fact that he did that, though, was huge. Like,
if he doesn't
pitch well that game, like, the Nats needed him because Scherzer, Strasburg, and Corbett were all pitching off short rest.
But, like, that performance was like, oh, my God, the Nats have a four-headed dragon at pitcher.
Yeah, it was wild. I was just saying, collectively, based on, like, what people go back to when talking about this, like, the run, because they talk about the wild card game,
They talk about us crushing Clayton Kershaw to overcome the Dodgers, and then people just kind of skip over the NLCS because we sweeped.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's
just, yeah. I can see where you're. Yeah,
and then seven games beating the Astros.
But I mean, it's hard to compete like a sweep. It's hard to compete a sweep versus a game, yeah. a series that goes all the way, like two different series yeah. that go the distance. Like, although Davey did make that famous "bumpy roads lead to beautiful places" speech at the end of that series, which was, I think, a really.
I think
cool
what Davey will be most memorable for was getting tossed in the finals.
Yeah.
So quick thing.
That was a crazy game.
Yeah, it was so crazy.
So quick thing, Nick, who is not currently on his mic, he at Rest his answers peace. he said the Caps are going to be most likely to get a championship, other than the Nats, and then he said that Rahul, you
are you texting him right now? Are you getting these answers live time?
No, bro, check the Zencaster chat. And then he said, Rahul, you're delusional for saying.
I didn't know there was a chat going on.
No, he said you must be on crack cocaine.
Well, I didn't. Okay, I didn't want to say the crack cocaine. But fine,
hey, you can't misquote the man.
Right, right. Okay, so one more question I just wanted to add, and this one is mainly for me. Was a question about what do you think of Dennis Rodman after watching The Last Dance? I don't know if you all watched The Last Dance yet, but
oh yeah,
dude, he is instant meme. He just became that. It's like. Click
you, do you know how good a player you have to be for Michael Jordan, the greatest basketball player of all time, and a dude who prides himself on putting himself over everyone else, have to come all the way to Las Vegas to get you after you're on your fucking bender? Bro, you have to be an amazing player for Jordan to do that.
It was famous, the stories, and they probably went over that. I didn't watch that latest episode, but they probably went over how much they hated each other, like Rodman, Jordan, and Pippen.
Well, it wasn't so much like they hated each other. It was just like the environment. Like Rodman.
Well, there were stories there where they'd like go into restaurants, like all three of them would be, and they'd have their own sections of the restaurant because they didn't want to sit near each other or speak to each other.
With their own. There's definitely three egos there, but like on court, they were magic.
I mean, it just was a toxic environment towards the end of it.
Jerry Krause would make that better.
Yeah, it was definitely his fault. Well,
I think at least Pippen is more friendly with Michael Jordan nowadays than they might have been towards the end. But, you know.
I do think the best quote to come out of the documentary so far is Rodman saying, he said, I'll play the game for free. I get paid to deal with all the other bullshit. Which I was like, that's crazy, because it's like he'll play the actual game for free because that's what he loves to do. But to deal with the off the court stuff, to deal with the media, like that's a huge mental toll, and probably definitely justifies why a lot of these athletes get paid the money they do.
Isn't it weird to be in such a great team but still having media being such a big deal to you, like on a day in, day out? I guess that's just like in the mind of a professional NBA player, but
there's
feel like
players
if you're
like that. I mean, look at Marshawn Lynch. Look at Anthony Rendon. Both those guys hate the media, but, you know, they got to deal with it just because that's the nature of the job.
I thought that was more of their personalities that they hated the media rather than, like, just
well,
like
they, it. Well, they also can't get on the mic and be like, yo, fuck all y'all. I hate y'all. Yeah. Y'all suck. Like, they can't say that. So they deal with it through humor. They deal with it through indifference. I'm sure Belichick hates the media too.
Yeah,
I feel like Belichick has finally like gotten used to it. Like the media has gotten used to Belichick. I should say it's the other way around.
But it had to start somewhere.
The media knows, like, eventually, like pretty much all the media knows Anthony Rendon doesn't like talking. Same with Marshawn Lynch. Like,
remember that vid where they put a wire on Rendon? Or they put a wire on Soto, and they also put a wire on Turner at one point.
Yeah, they put a wire on a lot of different guys.
And he wouldn't even speak to Rendon. He's like, "Oh, you have a wire on." "I'll stay mum."
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you all for listening. Be sure to like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter, send in questions, send in stuff you maybe want to hear on the pod, and we can certainly get to that. We'll have all of the social media handles in the description of the episode, and we hope you all tune in next week.